I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. And Jules, we have a packed week. Hyped and amped. We've got the Champions League coming back this week, the semifinal stage. We have Barcelona. They're going to be your lead item. Of course, they lost at home. We've got the Copa del Rey final. We've got Liverpool and City both winning 4 goals from Gabriel Jesus. Yeah. We've got Liverpool winning the Merseyside derby. That got a little bit tasty.
And we've got champions as well, Bayern and PSG.
New champions, Bayern and PSG. And the title race in Serie A, dramatic ending at the Stadio Olimpico as well. But let's start. Oh, and by the way, we have another Champions League as well, the CONCACAF Champions League. This is why I'm rocking my Seattle Sounders top.
Go Sounders.
Okay, I'm not actually a Sounders fan, let's be clear. I am equally a Pumas fan. So, Pumas, I don't have your shirt. So, if you'd like to send one down, double XL, please. I will happily rock it ahead of the return leg. Jules, Barcelona. We were all on the Xavi bandwagon. Three straight home defeats, if you count the Frankfurt game. At one point I said, like, I don't know the status, but it's been a long time since
1998.
Since that happened. Okay, so it was the last millennium, right?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Crazy. Crazy. I think the injuries have been a problem, certainly defensively. And Pedri in midfield, I think he's a big difference. And I know it's a bit of an obvious one to say that when Pedri is there and when he's not there, it's not the same. But since his injury, they haven't really been the same team. Let's be honest, in terms of creativity with the ball. Defensively, they've been a bit of a shambles a lot this season. We've seen Eric Garcia giving away penalties, making stupid fouls. And with Araujo, you know, playing a right back, for example, at times, with I think the many changes that he's made defensively, apart from Jordi Alba, really, and Ter Stegen, the only two who've kept the same position all the time. I think the changes and the tweaks all the time haven't helped them defensively.
What I'm struck in this game, and I think Xavi afterwards came out and he said, you know, they asked him about the three games, the three home defeats, and, you know, he basically said, well, they were different. And I think we in the media, we're dangerous. We fall into this trap where we kind of lump a defeat as a defeat. No, I mean, they were different.
Of course,
Frankfurt
they all are.
Was a very different type of game than this one. And they did have their chances. But what struck me was how easily Rayo on the counter, they had that second chance. They could have had two.
Easily.
The first one as well. All right, people praise Rayo's movement and whatever. But it feels like Dest has to come all the way across the pitch. And I don't think, surely, I mean, I know it's Dest's responsibility, but equally, it can't all be down to him. He doesn't expect the ball to come through with the ease that it did.
Completely. You're right. I think he's partly to blame because he's late, to be fair, and he should have seen him coming and maybe anticipated a little bit more. But you're right. It's far too easy. They're all over the place. But I think for most of the game, when Rayo was on the attack, which was not often, to be fair, but I thought defensively they were all over the place.
I would worry a little bit now when, you know, you mentioned the absentees, and I think the two, obviously in addition to Pedri, the one that they missed the most was Gerard Piqué. And I know Ansu Fati's still out, but he's hard to play this season.
Yeah, Piqué and Pedri are the two big ones,
But I do wonder, like, if you're missing a 34, 35-year-old guy who, let's face it, isn't going to stick around forever, and Pedri, who has been in and out all season with injuries and has got a lot of wear, and all of a sudden you can't beat Rayo at home, even though you had your chances. That's got to be concerning. I'm just wondering if they're further behind in the process. I've had people come and tell me, oh, because remember we said this on the show, I said, how can you say Real Madrid have a brighter future than Barcelona? And I'm like, well, I think now we see why. I think a lot of these guys, I'm not sure, are necessarily going to be part of the future of the club. And I think there's a lot more work to do there. There's obviously great starting points. There's people you can build around. Gavi maybe will make the grade. It certainly looks like he will. And but equally, it's like a reminder that, guys, let's put the Haaland talk to one side. Let's focus on finishing top four. Because that is a concern right now. They're playing Betis. It's not the next opponent. It's the one after that. Betis are 6 points behind them. But you lose that one away, and suddenly it's 3 points, and then suddenly you've got no real margin of error, unless Atletico and Sevilla also screw up.
I'm more worried about the Cadiz defeat. Dembele was the only one creating. They had chances. They probably didn't deserve to lose that one. I thought against Rayo, when Dembele didn't have a good day, really didn't have a good game, and Aubameyang was completely out of the game. I think he had 17 touches. He made six passes.
It slowed to a crawl.
No shot on target, nothing. Then there's not, and Pedri's not there. There's nothing. I think Gavi now has played too much for such a young player. And I think he still wastes so much energy trying to run everywhere and do everything. And he's amazing. But I think at times that could be counterproductive. And if you two fullbacks don't help, there's zero creativity. And against Rayo, there was zero creativity, really, for a Barca team.
As you know, I'm all about performance. And chances created, chances conceded.
Yeah.
And when you put those things together, this was a game Barcelona could easily have won.
Yeah.
But the context changes when, you know, you're talking about Rayo, who, you know, had started the season brightly, were on a terrible run.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, I think the way players think and the way fans think, you see the defeats in a row. You see, Xavi had said before how important it was to finish second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just Champions League, but second.
Yeah, second, yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, when you raise the stakes like that, you can't just go out and say, well, we had enough chances to win.
Yeah, and the Cadiz game, I can understand because you got knocked out of the Europa League, which was a shock. There was the whole supporters, how many Frankfurt fans, all those issues. Okay, and then you go on the Monday night and you struggle, but okay, you get it. But last night on Sunday night, I really expected them to start the game brightly, for example. You know, to go at them, to have a lot of movement, because of what Xavi said before, because of the two previous defeats, and they never lose three in a row, as we mentioned, 1998, the last time that was in almost another life. And yet, I don't know. So either Xavi could not motivate them enough, or maybe the tiredness, the long season, is taking its toll as well, plus the injuries, as we mentioned before. But I was very surprised by how lethargic they were at the beginning, and so they conceded early, which didn't help either. And then suddenly it's a very, very different game straight away.
So the motivation piece, I think, is an interesting one, because obviously players are motivated. I always kind of think it's kind of lazy sometimes when we in the media say, well, they don't look motivated. But you can tell. I mean, I agree with you. There was a certain lethargy to them.
Completely.
Now, lethargy can also be the flip side of confidence and patience.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of like, you know, I think we're guilty sometimes of looking at the final result and, you know, we explain it one way or the other, right? If those, if they score those goals and win 2-1, they said like, oh, look, they gave up the goal, but they didn't get rattled. They were patient. They knocked it out. The problem I have is, I think, against an opponent like Rayo, if you slow it down and try to knock it around and try to wait for that moment, I mean, the way Rayo set up, they're a good counterattacking side, the way there's two wide people. There wasn't a reaction from it, and there wasn't a reaction on the pitch. And I'm not going to blame Xavi, and maybe it's because I'm biased and I like Xavi. But
yeah. No, but
I look back at this, though, and I say some of the choices, like if you need somebody to go and break a game against a mass defense, which, you know, eventually 1-0 up, they were playing on the counter.
Yeah, completely.
Memphis is the guy who's going to do that. It's not going to be Aubameyang. And yet we waited until the hour mark to see Memphis. You know my thoughts on Memphis.
I
feel like he's been relegated a little bit. All of a sudden, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's here. It's like, you know, we've signed the original Ronaldo. Well, no, Memphis is Memphis.
But what we saw from Aubameyang in that game, and he's been great in the finishing. I think he scored 9-12 or 9-13 in La Liga. So finishing is not, but we knew he's always been a good finisher. And if you create a chance for him and he's in a good position, it's more likely than not that he's going to score. But from the beginning, if you remember when they signed him, we've explained and we said, okay, some goals will come, but he will not be able to take part of the build-up play, the link-up play, like a number nine at Barcelona should do or would do. And yesterday, I thought, was just the prime example of Aubameyang being there, but not really being there because hardly touched the ball. And again, this is not what he does. He doesn't link up the play. He's not that kind of number nine that Memphis is. So maybe Xavi got it wrong. Maybe Xavi felt I still have to play Aubameyang for the finishing part of the game. But the problem is, if there's no chances created for him, he's useless.
I mean, the last 20 minutes we saw
Normal De Jong.
With Memphis. You know, Memphis, when he came on for Ferran Torres, started in the wide area. I thought you had a little bit more of Memphis finding the space deeper, running at people, providing some more of the movement without losing that reference point in De Jong. But that was late.
That was really
late. I don't know. And I think the tone maybe was set earlier as well by the Frankie de Jong substitution, which I think you disagree with.
Yeah, completely. I think he disagreed with. I mean, well, his face was like thunder. I don't know. I know he wasn't good. But to take him off and replace by Nico, who will bring a lot of energy, and I think Nico is a really good young player, and he has.
He's
a
not going to bring goals, and he's not going
exactly.
To.
Exactly. For me, it didn't. So what was he trying to do? What to say to Nico? Make the runs in the box, but Nico doesn't do that. This is not his game. No. So what you said to Gavi? Okay, you would do the Frankie job maybe, and I thought I don't know. I would have left De Jong until the end because he's typically the kind of player who can have 60. Average minutes and then 5 amazing minutes where he creates something like we saw often this season or even score a goal, and I was very subdued by that call. And I also think Gab, and I've said it with Arteta before, as great as Xavi is and his tactics can be and the game plan can be and all of that, he's still so dependent on players who in certain positions are just not good enough. Not good enough for Barcelona and not good enough for Xavi. For Xavi as a manager.
Let's break this down. Let's try to imagine. And again, I don't want to be Mr. Doom and Gloom here because I don't want to raise the ire of some of these people who thought that Haaland was on his way. But obviously you've got the financial restrictions and, you know, the negative budget, which they'll get out of sometime. That's just kind of like a snapshot in time. But I don't think we're going to see a lot of spending. And so my question is, if you project forward, right, if we're imagining Barcelona winning the Champions League in 2 or 3 years, I ask myself, how many of these guys are realistically going to be a part of it? Because, in other words, what do you need to do over the next 2 or 3 years? And if I go through this, maybe Ter Stegen can regain his mojo. I think he's been a little bit better of late, but obviously he had a big dip. So whatever, that's not going to be a priority. Jordi Alba, left back, you can still get something out of for the next couple of years.
And you can sign someone like Gaia, for example.
But
you
know, but you've got so many other people. I don't think Gaia's going to come, personally. But at right back, obviously, that is something that, that they need to address. Because I don't... Sergiño Dest hasn't shown yet that he's a starter-level guy on a Champions League winning... hypothetical Champions League winning Barcelona team.
Yeah, completely. And they missed out on Mazraoui, so...
At centre back, Gerard Piqué will bow out at some point. Longley, presumably, as well. So you have Araujo, and as of right now, they've committed money and resources to Christensen and Eric Garcia.
Yeah.
Neither of whom, to me, looks like a Champions League winning.
Well, certainly not Garcia.
Christensen, I could say, has done it before, but obviously.
I think there's more hope for Christensen to become that kind of player. I mean, Eric Garcia.
But it's not like Christensen's 22 either. He's a player in mid career.
Yeah, yeah, but still.
Who's had a rough time.
Yeah, yeah, but I still think that 25 or 26 years, it's a good time. As a free agent, I think this is good for them.
Yeah, no.
This is really good business. And it's better than Garcia, better than Longley, better than Umtiti. And him and Araujo, I think, can have a really good partnership.
All right. Busquets as well. I don't think he's going to be around in 2 or 3 years' time at that level. And if he is, that means Barcelona have a problem.
Yeah.
Are we sure Nico is the answer? I think that there's still a question mark there. Can he be a useful player? Yes. Can he be a starter caliber player on a team that wins the Champions League? Barcelona side? I'm not sure.
Not sure.
Pedri obviously isn't a problem.
No.
Gavi, tremendous future, but still very young. And you have to be, I think you said, sometimes these guys can't be expected to play every game.
Exactly.
And
but they made the same mistake with Pedri last season, and he ended up playing 99 games with club and national team, and then missed a lot of this season because he was burnt out.
I think the difference, though, is Pedri was productive throughout much of that time.
And then
it was more like a physical, mental burnout.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
Whereas with Gavi, I don't know that he's been on that same Gavi level the whole time.
No,
he's had a lot more ups and downs, which again, is very normal for a young player. But
of course,
this is really being thrown to the lines, and people who bring up, you know, Iniesta or whatever. Iniesta didn't play this many games until he was like 22, 23 years old. Let's not forget that.
And had a different team around him too.
And obviously a different team around him. De Jong, I think, is the question mark because he's had a rough season. So I think there's a huge call to make there on De Jong.
What if Den Haag and United come over and say, listen, we want him. We offer you 60, 70.
De Jong is one of Barcelona's saleable assets that would then... help you then make investments elsewhere, because they do have to make investments elsewhere. Dembele, we have no clue if he's staying, right?
Yeah.
Aubameyang is obviously not going to be your center forward in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
Ferran Torres, you know, I really like the guy, but again, it's a lot of up and down and up and down from him. We're waiting for Ansu Fati to return.
Yeah.
But we're still talking. I don't know, Kessié is coming in midfield and he's going to help. But
yeah, Kessié is going to help. And Kessié could easily be the young replacement in a way if you cash in on the young.
We're still talking 4 or 5 high quality starters that they need to find. Not straight away, because next year I think will be another transition year.
Yeah.
But in 2-3 years' time. And that is a big job. I hope Xavi gets the backing. And I hope also that people will remember a little bit that, you know, his track record, his experience, the managing where he was managing before is nothing like managing here.
Yeah.
And having experienced this as a captain and as a leader of Barcelona is going to be very different than doing it as a manager when the buck stops with you.
And he's made mistakes. He has made mistakes this season, like a lot of young managers have made, and even some more experienced like Nagelsmann in a big club as well, like Bayern. So this is a learning curve for him. But I repeat it again, he needs better players for his plan to work, for all the tactics that he wants. You know, I think some of the stuff is almost too hard to implement on certain players because they're just not good enough. It's not bad on them, they're good players, but they're just not good enough for this kind of coaching, for this kind of club, for this kind of pressure and expectations and all of that. And until he gets the right quality of players, especially in some positions, then there will always be a stumbling block. There will always be something that prevent them from winning, maybe not La Liga, but certainly the Champions League.
I want to go back to the story that we talked about last week, just because it concerns Gerard Piqué, who was so important to this club. Mm. This business with him on the phone, with Rubiales on the phone. There was an extraordinary press conference afterward that Rubiales gave where he talked about how, you know, he even referenced the mafia. I don't think he's talking about the real mafia. I think he's talking about the metaphorical mafia,
I would hope. So.
He says, what are they going to do? Are they going to plant cocaine in my car? Are you going to find me in a ditch? Blah, blah, blah.
He really
laid it on very, very thick. And on the one hand, I can see his point. On the other hand, there's no escaping the fact that an enormous commission was paid to a company that's owned by a current player, that current player as well, like in conversations, and look, it's not official, maybe it's just chit-chat, maybe their buddies begin at Rubiales, and you know, and he talks about his team, Andorra, that Piqué actually owns.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard, I think, to be a businessman and be an active player at the same time. It's just an evident conflict.
If you want to work in the Olympics,
the same with the Olympics as well.
No, but Piqué can do the tennis and the Davis Cup. I don't care. This is another sport. If he wants to call people and lobby and ask for favors in tennis, I could not care less. But surely someone of his intelligence, I mean, Rubiales, but Piqué should say, okay, I have to be careful here because this is not tennis or it's not Twitch or whatever. This is my own game. This is football. And the backlash could be terrible here. And he might get away with it. And we don't know. We can't predict what's going to happen now with the investigation and what else they have. Imagine, you would think that El Confidencial, being the paper that they are, easily could have kept maybe even more explosive stuff than what they've published so far, right? You start like that, and then maybe they've got even more. Imagine what I'm working.
It's a really uncomfortable situation. Piqué was on the bench. He supposedly had a knock, but
yeah,
I think
yeah,
it was also.
I'm not sure if he was fully fit.
It might have also been his state of mind as well right now, because.
Completely.
And if you're going to portion blame, I mean, obviously the one who's going to suffer the most out of these two is, I would assume, it will end up being Rubiales, because you can't, you know, there is a basic ethical standard of certain things that you don't talk about on the phone. But, and there's a basic common sense standard to know that if you're talking in WhatsApp messages or whatever, these things aren't encrypted.
But yeah, but even for me, the worst is the referee talks, Gab, because this is you getting onto the territory of Calciopoli and all of that in Italy that you know so well. It's true. if Piqué starts saying to Rubiales, I don't like this referee should not referee us, you know, he made that mistake, and what about VAR? And then Rubiales then start talking to referee or start deciding what referee refer, you know, is the referee for a Barcelona match. This is too wrong then, and this is going too far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it quite reached the level, but you know, the punishment for Juve, of course, was relegation in the end, right? So, I don't think we're anywhere near that level.
Also
makes a difference that Piqué is, you know, Piqué is in La Porta. Piqué is a Barcelona footballer, and in some ways, you could view that as a bit different than kind of like the institutional communication.
Of course. But
it's not a good situation. And what really surprised me was also, and you know, I met Rubiales a couple of times. You know, he's a union guy. He's obviously an ex-player. I think he got very emotional in that press conference.
Yeah.
And I think in his mind, he's like, well, wait, what did I do wrong? People are conspiring against me. But then at the same time, you need a PR guy who tells you, listen, don't say silly things. When he brought up Saudi Arabia, and he said, like, you know, oh, we did it for the women of Saudi Arabia. Excuse me? Really? I mean, even the whole concept of signing a contract, when you represent a league and institution where you get a certain amount, but then you get a higher amount if Barcelona and Real Madrid are there, can't be doing that.
I know.
You can't be. You see what I'm saying?
Like, of course, because then it's in your interest to make sure that Barca and Real Madrid are there.
Yeah, it's not a good look. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Liverpool beat Everton 2-0 in a spicy Merseyside derby to stay 1 point behind Manchester City. Jules Lampard was a bit grumpy after the game. Was he right to be?
He wanted a penalty. He said there was two incidents.
Well, one is just a dive. I don't know what the hell he's seeing.
One is
the
dive.
But the other one...
I might be the minority here. I don't know. But I don't think it was a pen, I have to say.
The Matip Anthony on Gordon. Yeah. I don't think the second one was a penalty.
I don't think there's enough contact at all. I really don't see it.
I think it's very simple. I think it's enough to throw him off. You already booked him for diving.
And I don't know, maybe he also pays for the little reputation that he's trying to have.
I'll say this.
This is not the first time.
To me, it's either a foul or it's a penalty. And, it's either a penalty or a dive, right? Yeah. And maybe you don't want to, you know, Atwell didn't want to send a guy off for two simulations.
I just think that with VAR now, this, if it was really a foul, they would have given it. Do you see what I mean? I just think they were not convinced at all by the fact that it was a foul.
Yes, unlike you, I don't have boundless faith in...
No, it's not that. And Everton played like Atletico Madrid with a different shirt. You know, was it the right call? I'm not so sure. I expect them to go... Yeah, with a back five.
I think Liverpool's halftime expected goals were like 0.3, so you could argue it was the right goal.
It's hard to do over 90 minutes, though, clearly, as the second half showed.
Well, yeah, and then you send on the cavalry, you send on, you know, Diaz and Origi.
How
about that?
Exactly. Gab, on Saturday, Manchester City had destroyed Watford 5-1, which they do every season anyway, and Gabriel Jesus had scored 4 goals. I know you love to talk about recognised strikers, of course.
I am fascinated by Gabriel Jesus because he's 25 years old. His contract expires in June 2023, which I think a lot of people have kind of missed out on. And he hasn't been offered a new one, right? All he gets is just...
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, well, fine. But, you know, normally you would expect somebody else might show an interest in him. I think other people are looking at him and they're saying, well, what are we getting? Because when he arrived, he was presented as like a center forward.
He was.
And he was, you know, the heir apparent to Sergio Aguero. And he actually... scored a lot of goals. People seem to forget this.
Yeah.
When he was playing centrally in Aguero's position, you know, when he was sharing time with Aguero, obviously, his non-penalty goals per 90 minutes were like 0.77, 0.6. That's really good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Then he moves him out wide. There's even talk that he could be playing right back against Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Turns him into a pressing machine. I don't know. He's still 25 years a player in there. I'm just wondering, does he know what he wants to be? Does he know what he is? And maybe that's why there's no offers for him.
Yeah.
Or that we know of.
But no, he's been linked with Arsenal this weekend. And I don't know if it's real or if it's to get a new deal at City. I don't know if he would want to leave City. I don't know if he feels like he should be playing more instead of playing in a way second.
I would hope he feels he should be playing more.
Yeah. I think if you can get it for 20 or 25 million, considering there's just 1 year left on his contract, this could be a really good deal for a very versatile player.
I think
he could do a job centrally. You could play him wide. I think he's a very intelligent player. He's a good boy.
I think even better, stay where you are, win the World Cup with Brazil, see if City want to give you a new deal or not, and otherwise go and become a free agent next year.
Yeah, and that's also quite the likely scenario.
Paris Saint-Germain draw with Lens to clinch Ligue 1, but Jules, not Woo-hoo! Everybody was in the mood to celebrate like you are. Many fans left early in protest, and as a result, there was no lap of honor. That's not embarrassing or anything.
It was not protest per se. They wanted to celebrate without the players. As you do.
The Parisiens are already reporting that Mauricio Pochettino is on his way out. That would take 50 million to move on. Plus, inevitably, who else? Rumors of Antonio Conte offering himself.
Yeah.
Help me make sense of this.
What a club. What kind of club the ultras say, like, you know what? We've been so disappointed by this season. This is so underwhelming. No, we're going to not support you during the game. And then before the end of the game, we're going to leave the stadium and celebrate the title on our own.
I love it.
I mean,
what other voice do these people have?
Why is it my club, though? Why does it have to be my club and not another club? Like, Bayern fans do it and, you know, protest and go outside. And it was a crazy atmosphere. The players, well, some didn't care, went straight to the tunnel in the dressing room. Others, there was not even a lap of honor, Gab. I mean, the stadium.
How can you? You can't do a lap of honor when the stadium's empty. You look like a tool if you do that.
Yeah, true. I don't know. It was so strange. So it was unreal, really, to be fair. It's 10. In a way, I'm happy, but I understand the fans.
It's 10 in your entire history. Bayern have won 10 in a row.
I know. It's been a very underwhelming season, though, to be fair. On an happier note, Gab, Lionel Messi scored a great goal, the third to open the scoring. Not that it was enough to win, but Gab, it was his fourth, only his fourth of the season in Ligue 1. He's got 5 in the Champions League. There's a loads of assists on top, but he will finish with his lowest totals of goals since he was 18 in the 05-06 season.
Also lowest totals of games played as well.
Yeah. If we could travel back in time to August 2021 when he was signed, do you think that PSG and Nasser Al-Khelaifi would do it again?
They probably would, because saying it was the right decision at the time. Knowing what we know now, and this is a captain hindsight exercise, I don't think you sign him. I think you take a step back, you take a more intelligent view, you spend all that money that you're giving him in wages. You know, you got to look at the numbers, right? Did he increase your revenue? Did he increase your results? You say no.
Your revenue, yeah, massively.
Well, yes, but yeah, to justify the amount of money you're paying him, I would assume almost certainly not.
No.
And you spend that money on other players who are going to make you better. I think that, and by the way,
I feel stronger about Neymar, not signing Neymar back in 2017, than the same about Messi.
And you don't need Donnarumma and Keylor Navas, but I think we've worked that one out by now. Arsenal beat Manchester United 3-1, and the Gunners are now fourth. Jules, they're going to do this, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. If they keep playing like they did against Chelsea and, to some extent, United, although the game could have easily gone the other way had Bruno Fernandes scored that dreadful penalty. Yeah, they will, because now they're 2 points clear of Spurs, who drop points. And I think those two games will fill them with confidence. There was a lot of positives, especially at Chelsea. We've mentioned that before, but even on Saturday. And they're in the driving seat again. I just think United were, for part of the game, so bad, so inefficient in their press, for example.
Do we not read anything in the fact that they tried to get back into it, and if Bruno Fernandes hadn't taken the second worst penalty of the weekend?
Yeah, but he still didn't, Gab. And yeah, they were unfortunate with VAR and with the referee. I think they should have had certainly one penalty. And the Chaka goal and the end catch-up position.
You don't see any kind of fight in United because of this?
I see the fight
for United.
Yeah, no, I see, but I was still disappointed overall by the result, by the performance. When they've got strong moments, they don't capitalize, and when they've got weaker moments, they get punished all the time. This is not how you finish top four.
By the way, can you work out how Bruno Fernandes did not get sent off?
I mean, this was crazy.
Like, honestly, I mean, back in the day, you have a disciplinary committee afterwards.
Yeah,
the ball has left the guy's foot from like 45 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really bad. It's the second straight game he's done.
Compensation for me, they knew they should have given a penalty.
So let's kind of let you go and whack this guy.
That's my theory. And meanwhile, Gab, in that game, Cristiano Ronaldo scored his 100th Premier League goal. His 22nd of the season. By the way, now he's scored over 100 goals in the Champions League, in La Liga, in the Premier League, international level. I mean, this is just crazy stuff.
Serie A as well, I think, no?
And Serie A as well, yeah.
No, I don't think he got 100.
No, maybe not 100 in Serie A. In the interest of fairness and equity, as we did before with Lionel Messi, let's go back in time and to August 2021. Would they sign him again?
Again, I think Cristiano Ronaldo has done his part. I think he has helped Manchester United. But again, this is an exercise in hindsight, right? Knowing what we know now, I don't think commercially he's lived up to his record, because the amount of money they had to spend for him between the wages and the transfer. Not Ronaldo's fault,
yeah,
right? But he hasn't. Knowing what we know now, like, they're going to have their third manager in 12 months, knowing that they signed him at the end of August, right? So, which evidently tells you that there was no planning involved in signing him. No, knowing what we know now, if Ronaldo hadn't been there, where would United finish this season? Eighth? Ninth?
Yeah.
Right? Will it make much of a difference compared to where they're going to finish this year?
They certainly would not have qualified out of the group stages of the Champions League.
So. Yeah, I think, no, they would have gone out, yeah. So I think it's not Ronaldo's fault, but it simply would have meant they would have, I guess, embarked on the rebuild a year earlier, and maybe they should have seen that coming, that it wasn't going to work out with Solskjaer.
Yeah.
Bayern make a 10 in a row as they beat Borussia Dortmund 3-1. Jules, not much of a surprise. Bayern are champions and Dortmund self-destruct.
Exactly, Gab. I mean, we got excited again thinking, oh, this game is going to be amazing. Let's see, maybe Dortmund, maybe Haaland. No. After 14 or 15 minutes, Gnabry scored that goal.
Dortmund were okay at the start.
The game is over. As soon as Gnabry scored, the game is over. Even when Emre Can scored that penalty early in the second half, you knew they were not going to come back.
And Zagadou.
I mean, come on. I mean, maybe, and I don't know. Bayern are too good. Bayern are very good. Yeah, they are. Even when they make mistakes, even when they'll be shaky in Nagelsmann's first season. But Dortmund are never going to win the title by being so inconsistent, so poor defensively. I mean, set pieces, let's not even go there.
I also want to say, just because people have been, those takes like, oh, it's not good for the Bundesliga, the Bayern. Those are the kind of like Captain Obvious takes. But on the other hand, if you look at it, I go back to this because I had a conversation with Philipp Lahm about this. He says, look at the Bundesliga. The attendance, the stadiums are full.
Yeah.
People go and watch. People don't just watch because they want to win the league. They've become accustomed to saying, it's not like they stop watching because Bayern win every year. I think that's...
And the problem is not Bayern being so good. It's the others not doing enough to catch up and try to compete with them. Sandro Tonali scores an injury time winner for Milan as they win away to Lazio 2-1 at the Stadio Olimpico and go back to the top of Serie A. Gab, Stefano Pioli decided to give a lesson in the animals of the savannah after the game too. What night? Yeah.
It was pretty incredible. I mean, they were poor in the first half. In the second half, they were all over them. They were tremendous. You know, classic halftime team talk situation. Pioli made a brave decision taking on Rafael Leao, who was exceptional. Afterwards, his post-match speech, he says, you know, the lion is not the biggest animal in the savannah. That would be the elephant. The lion is not the fastest. That would be the cheetah. The lion, and you know, it was weird.
Like, they are the lions.
They are the lions. And guess what? Has a giant tattoo of a lion on his back.
Oh.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic, of course.
Indeed. Who
came on and delivered the assist for Tonali's dramatic winner. But Tonali, exceptional. Like, Milan, they're in the lead. They Inter have that game in hand. But that Inter-Bologna game is going to be huge.
Yeah, massive.
Real Madrid didn't play this weekend. But sure, it doesn't mean we can't fuel the Mbappe speculation machine. Is he still talking to PSG just out of mere courtesy?
Why would they?
Why would he? To be polite.
Polite for what?
Take some pressure off the club?
Nothing. He's out of contract. He can already sign wherever he wants.
I know he can, but why is he still talking to them? Because is he actually talking to them, or is he just, just go in, they go blah, blah,
well, no,
blah,
his mum was in Qatar this week, in Doha, well, last week, sorry, and she met
with Nasser Al-Khelaifi. Sure it wasn't just tourism? She wanted a break?
It wasn't just tourism, no. There was a bit of tourism, but it was not just tourism. I believe there's more meetings to come in Paris this week. He would also go to Madrid. Well, not him, but the family. It'd be interesting to see, but it's, no, I really believe him when he says he hasn't decided yet. You believe that he's already signed for Real Madrid.
I don't know, a lot of people believe that.
I don't. Not yet. He might end up there, and good for him, but not yet. Inter beat Roma and the old prophet Jose Mourinho gab on Saturday night, 3-1. It's 5 wins in a row now for Simone Inzaghi, 2 points back of Milan, but with a game in hand against Bologna. We mentioned it. They have the momentum, right?
They have the momentum, and look,
they played well.
I'm skeptical about momentum, but you're right. They played really well. They played with a confidence. I mean, I'm just not used to seeing Inter play really pretty football. That first goal, it starts with Samir Handanovic.
Yeah.
He gets the ball, and from there to Denzel Dumfries, being clean through on goal, and he would score.
In the number nine position.
Yeah, cutting over from the right wing back position. I mean, it's 6 passes, 7 touches. It would have been 6 first time passes if Di Marco hadn't taken an additional unnecessary touch. But we forgive that.
Yeah, we forgive of course.
I mean, it was just really, really pretty football. The Brozovic goal as well, where everybody goes and changes position. Brozovic turns into a winger.
Hadn't scored all season, and now he's scored 2-2, Brozovic.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. They look like champions. I know it's a great title race, but they look like champions.
They do look like champions now. And so it's a bit of a question. Obviously, you got to. Now, this is what makes this title race so fantastic. Milan, I think, have had a lot of ups and downs. Milan have been unluckier this season. Milan have had more injuries. But if Inter can take it to this level consistently, they're just a joy to watch. By the way, Mourinho, standing ovation, totally milked it. No. Rightly so. You earned it, man. Yeah, you delivered a treble back in 2009-10. He will always be one of the kings of the black and blue side of Milan. And he was in such a good mood that he even came out and he praised the referees. And he wasn't being ironic either. Good for him.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
A late goal from Christian Pulisic gives Chelsea a 1-0 win over West Ham, which should guarantee Champions League football next year, which is pretty huge.
Yeah.
But Jules, I have to ask, who took the uglier penalty, Jorginho or Bruno Fernandes?
Well, Jorginho, it's not even a debate. Jorginho was one of the worst penalties you would ever seen. Bruno sent the keeper the wrong way, and then it's just a question of inches. Jorginho was terrible, Gab. Terrible. It's the slowest ball. I spoke to Fabianski after the game and I asked him.
How does that happen? Did he mishit it? Or
my question was to Fabianski was this the worst penalty you've ever saved or faced? And he burst out laughing and he said, he broke it down really well, to be fair, but he said the ball was so slow, I reckon he could have stopped it with his foot.
I think he could have dived, gotten back up, fixed himself a sandwich and saved it. That's how slow the ball was.
But Jorginho should not be taking penalties for a long time.
This game was weird to me, Jules, because West Ham are obviously thinking of Seville and the Europa League.
They had white centre-backs.
As so they should, right? Yeah, you've got this Ben Johnson and Cresswell. So you've got a left-back and a sprinter either side of Craig Dawson.
Playing for the draw, which clearly was their plan.
And Christensen, you criticised them for continuing to play Christensen. Well, he did, but he was going to.
He was going to start
again. I don't understand. Why?
Why?
Why do we need to see this guy?
But we've said it so many times. He's switched off. He's not there anymore. Why don't you put Shalobah straight in? Which ended up doing because Christensen
and
got...
And he finally played a front two. He's done it a couple times before, but Havertz and Werner together, right? And...
But then to put Havertz like wide on the right hand side for most of it, it was weird. And I tweeted it and I pointed out I was sat again at Stamford Bridge close to the benches, and Thomas Tuchel stayed sat down the whole first half for all hour, not moving, not giving any directions to his players, not even moaning at the referee. He's the king, well, not the king of moaning, but he moans a lot to the fourth referee, to the referee, nothing. lethargic, not giving anything on the bench.
He's not in a good place. Obviously, his private life might have something to do with it, sell the club, whatever
it is,
else.
It is.
But
I was still surprised. Even knowing all of that, I was still surprised.
On the brighter spot.
They were poor. That first half was terrible.
Okay, but they, Pulisic, who couldn't get off the bench, and Lukaku couldn't start. Pulisic scores a goal. Lukaku comes on, put himself about. I mean,
exactly. Got the pen. They should have come on earlier, for sure. But it's good. It's good. Let's hope, though, that now, in the next game, this get rewarded. In a way, I want to see Pulisic starting now.
Said it all along that Lukaku should play so
and
you
Lukaku
can assess
right.
what you have,
exactly.
whether he stays or goes next season. But hey.
More points dropped for Tottenham as they draw 0-0 away at Brentford on Saturday. Gap just one shot on target in the last two games, the defeat against Brighton and then that draw. And Ivan Toney hit the woodwork, by the way, right at the end and could have won it for Brentford. Are you surprised that Conte was not maybe more grumpy?
Yeah, he's like, well, it's difficult to play against teams who defend you. I'm like, look, you have Son, you have Harry Kane, you have Kulusevski who's on fire. Of course, Brentford are going to defend it. You've seen them play before,
what'd you
right?
expect?
I don't know. I think this is worrying because the Villa game as well. I know they won 4-0, but the first half was pretty bad too, as you pointed out before. And it's not like they've got major injuries. You know, this is the team that he's putting out there. I think it has to be a concern. I think there's going to be serious clouds over him. I really need to see them in the North London Derby to fully assess which way this is going. That's going to be huge. I think it's coming up, was it May 12th?
Yeah.
Right around there.
Yeah.
By the way, Eriksen, I love the stories now linking Eriksen to a return to Spurs. And he's like, does nobody knows what happened the last time Conte and Eriksen, unless they know something we don't about Conte's
maybe,
future.
Exactly.
Betis win the Copa del Rey, defeating Valencia on penalties. But Jules, we have to celebrate our boy Joaquin.
Of course, Joaquin, who obviously won this competition 17 years ago for Betis. I even had the cup at his wedding in the church.
And then he won it again for Valencia
a few
years ago.
For Valencia. And then obviously now 41 is.
I think he's still 40. I think he turns 41 in the summer.
41 this summer. To win it again is incredible.
It's not clear if he's going to continue or not.
No, we'll see. I mean, I think we all want him to. He's got already deals sorted out to be a pundit anyway, and he would be a great pundit. His penalty was shocking in the penalty shootout, but still went in somehow. And what a fairy tale story for him.
I think what I love, people forget this. Joaquin has 51 caps from Spain. I think his last cap was like more than a decade ago. So he's somebody who's put to one side. And I think part of it is because he doesn't look like a modern winger in the sense that he's chunky for a winger. Is that a fair? Even when he was younger.
He was quite a bit.
But he was not an athlete. He wasn't one of those like power wingers. Like you know, you watch Luis Figo. Like Figo could obviously have the skill and everything, but he could also power past you just through strength. He doesn't necessarily have that. He just has a lot of skill. He's the kind of winger, you pass the ball to him, slows it down, foot on it, does a trick, delivers across. And, you know, that's the side of the game that no longer exists, but, you know,
cannot love
very happy for him.
Yeah, exactly. And for Damil Fekir, and for
Manuel Pellegrini.
Of course, for Pellegrini as well. Great, great win.
Now finished top four.
Exactly. Let's see. With 10 minutes to go on Sunday, Napoli were beating Empoli 2-0 and still in the title race, of course. And then in 7 minutes, they threw it all away. Gab, this was unbelievable. They lost 3-2.
Yeah, three goals conceded.
How?
In 7 minutes. The first one, good finish from Liam Henderson. The second one, Alex Meret.
Yeah, the mistake before the Liam Henderson finish.
He
cleared the ball in his path.
Yeah, that's your boy Kevin Makuya, by the way, who came on weirdly at halftime for Zanoli, who I thought had been doing okay. Then Alex Meret channeling his inner Zach Steffen.
Come on. Crazy.
And then the third one, it's
Pinamonti.
It's really, really bad. And, you know, people are blaming Spalletti because, you know, people are supposed to say when they're in title races, like about a month ago, Spalletti said, you know, they said, oh, are you in a title race? You know, normally people say, oh, we take it one day at a time, we'll see. And he says, no, we want to win
honest.
It this year.
Yeah, I remember like, we saying on the show.
I love that, honestly. He's like, I'm not young anymore. Who knows how many more chances I'll get to win it? We want to win it. And then the wheels come off like this. And they played really well earlier. The reaction, typical, you know, De Laurentiis chaos. First announcement is like, okay, everybody's going to go in Retiro, which is like a boot camp where you can't leave the hotel except to train and play
games.
Like
it is when Carlo was there.
And it's, of course, it was a player revolt at the time. Yeah. And it's going to be a permanent one. It's going to continue until the player's contract finishes or until I deem otherwise. Now, this morning there was an official release in the club saying, no, we're going to have bonding sessions. We're going to have dinners together. We're going to spend time together, get in the right time frame. I think clearly there's been another player's revolt there.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It's a shame for all the Napoli fans who, you know, they're so passionate about their team.
I really thought they could do it. They lost to Empoli twice. They lost to Spezia. They dropped
five home defeats, Jules.
I mean, that's it. That's what cost them. Yeah, Three draws and five defeats at home. This is it.
Let's talk women's Champions League semifinals. Lyon beat Paris Saint-Germain 3-2, and it promises to be a finely poised return leg. The other tie, not so much, as Barcelona smashed Wolfsburg 5-1.
I mean, Barca were just incredible. Really, really, really incredible. They are as good as you would watch in the men's game too. They're so fantastic. Everything they do is just incredible. And then the Lyon-PSG game, which obviously was a French derby, amazing, some mistakes made. Do you remember, obviously, the Kira Amrari story? Well, there's another story. She had a fight with a teammate at training the day before the game, or on Friday, 2 days before the game, where she insulted that her teammate, Sandy Baltimore, and then didn't turn up when the coach left Paris to go to Lyon.
Really?
It's just crazy, guy. It is crazy. Crazy. So I'm glad, in a way, PSG only losing 3-2 away at Lyon is not a bad result. And then they can go at Paris in a great atmosphere to try to get to the final. To be fair, neither of those teams right now can beat Barcelona anyway. But going to the final would be great for PSG, especially after the season.
We should get Kira Amrawi on Gavin Jules Meets, because it sounds like she has a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, she has. As we know, Antonio Rudiger is a free agent in the summer, and Tuchel said that he doesn't blame Rudiger for not staying at Chelsea, because now we know that Rudiger is going to leave. But Tuchel says that the sanction of the club prevented them from putting up more of a fight to keep him. Before you give your answer, this is not true. I don't believe it. This is not true.
My answer very simply is, I think this is more evidence that Tuchel's not in a great place right now. I don't understand what you're saying here, right? So you're saying he made a personal decision to leave, which to me says not about the money. Oh, but if it wasn't for the sanctions, we'd have more money that we could throw at him. But if he's made his personal decision to leave, doesn't matter if you're going to pay him $50 million a year, right? What are you trying to say here? If you just want to say, look, he's leaving, personal decision, move on. Leave the sanctions out of it. That, if it's a personal decision.
Yeah.
If it's about the money, then sure, the sanctions come into it. I don't understand his message. I understand what he's doing. But you don't believe what?
Because the first offers that they made to Rudiger and his brother before the sanctions, before the war in Ukraine, were not good enough. You can't. He's maybe your player of the season. He's been one of your best players since Tuchel arrived. And you make him an offer way below what you should be making him with the status that he has and why he's provided for the team since January. I just don't get it, Gab. I really don't get it. I promise you, like, you don't... I mean, you offered him less money than some of the fourth or fifth choices in midfield. Come on, he's your best defender. It didn't make sense to me. And now to blame the sanctions, where clearly the effort was not made even before the sanctions, I don't understand it either.
Jules, remember a few years ago when Premier League Academy teams were admitted to the FA Trophy, the cup, which for those who don't know, it's a cup competition for clubs in League One and below. People said at the time, oh, this is going to be so important for the development. You know, they say, there's the blockage in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. All these talented under 21 players, they can't just play each other. They need to play against real men, blah, blah, blah. And logically, you'd imagine, I looked at the rules. These are under 21 teams, but you can have two overage players.
Yeah.
I would have thought Premier League teams are
pretty
good, right? But they're terrible, apparently. I haven't thought
it's going to be I saw it too.
There's 16 teams participated. Only three of them, and there's a group stage at the beginning, only three of them made it past the group stage. Highest achiever were Arsenal, who reached the quarterfinal and then lost. This experiment's kind of run its course, right?
Yeah, and I'm quite surprised. I thought this was a really good idea. I've always been an advocate of... Don't have a league just for the under 19 or under 21s. Do like many other leagues do, where you have your youth team or your reserve team playing in the third or fourth or fifth division of professional, you know, with men.
And I don't like it, but that's because I'm more of a traditionalist and I think it's unfair, but you know, but whatever.
For me, for the development, for a 19-year-old.
But are you surprised that so they're this bad?
But yeah, completely. So it's either those academies are really bad. All of them. City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool.
And we know that's not the case because they churn out good players.
Well, yeah, and they do pretty well usually.
Or do you take this seriously?
They don't take it seriously. Or maybe the teams from League One, League Two are really good. I never watched them, so I can't tell you.
Or maybe the games are more physical.
Too physical, too aggressive.
I don't know, but then again, like, Ken, you got two overage players. You know, we're talking about like 20-year-olds. Like, it's not like League One, League Two. They're all like nasty 30-year-olds with tattoos who've been through the war.
The only one thing I think, is those teams and those players are taught in those academies to play.
That's the argument. Nice pretty football, right?
Yeah, pretty football.
And to work on development rather than getting results.
Exactly. And I think when they face players of their age in the reserve leagues, they play against teams that play similar football to them. When they go into this cup, they play old school football for a lot of them. Not all of them. Some League One teams play well, but a lot of them still play, as you say, very aggressive, long ball,
second balls, blah, blah, blah,
which they don't used to, maybe, but it's a dreadful ratio. Gab, remember when we were told that the Chelsea sale would be quick and smooth, and now it's been nearly 2 months, and we still have three parties bidding. What's going on?
I don't know, but people are getting a little bit annoyed here.
Well, right,
also, because they keep asking for more guarantees. What are going to be your plans for the stadium? We've been reminded again, like I've been saying all along, Roman Abramovich can also say, nah, I'm not going to sell. I'm going to wait for you to unfreeze the sanctions. Possibly. They've now been, you know, I think one of these bid teams that I spoke to says, well, we were told that Rain would select their preferred bidder.
Yeah.
And then the government would issue a license and give their view. Now they're saying like, hey, how about another round of bids? There's suggestions that the bid led by Steven Pagliuca could bow out next week, and that they'd limit it to two bids going head to head, which of course would be the Todd Bowley Viss bid, and the Bratton Lord Coe
Hamilton Williams. So many names there.
Harrison Blitzer, the money man.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. It could also be that the government is so heavily involved in this, and obviously the government right now busy with other factors as well.
Yeah.
But it's pretty exciting, and I don't know if this is a great precedent too, having a government so involved in a sale like this.
I don't think so.
I would imagine they could have made rules and then stepped away.
Because these kind of things take a long time anyway. You know, City, PSG, like, you know, it's not something that you just do like this.
Talking about putting together billions and billions,
Twisting
the tail in the race for Champions League spot in the Bundesliga, Jules. Bayer Leverkusen destroy Greuther Fürth 4-1, and Leipzig defeat to Union Berlin. Obligatory reference to our producer, Freddie. And that was at home. Means Rico Suave's boys are third again.
Yeah, little scare at the beginning of the game, and then they played well.
And Freiburg coming from behind. They're 2 points behind Leipzig.
I know. This is going to be very exciting. We said that the title race is over, obviously, Bayern winning it. But this is good. And Leipzig, you thought when they scored the first goal, were in control. And then Sven Mikkel arrived, and he changed the whole game. And if you don't know him, he's got this almost legendary status in Germany. He's 31. They signed him from Paderborn in January. And he's this number 10, bald, let's be honest, or losing his hair, a bit like producer Freddie. And just amazing. And he came on. And the assist, if you haven't seen on the winning goal from him, when you expect him to shoot, is Guti-esque or Benzema-esque. Even so, well done to him.
Or Ilicic-esque. Not quite that far. Maybe.
Yeah, but check it out. Great win for them. Great win for Union. Sad, but maybe inevitable news at the bottom of the Football League, Gab. Oldham Athletic, one of the founder members of the Premier League 30 years ago, have been relegated amidst fan protests as well.
What I say about the lower leagues, oversight, transparency, clear rules. They only have themselves to blame because the clubs don't want clear rules and oversight because they don't want somebody in their business. Yeah. And the upshot is you have this situation. It should also serve us as a reminder of what the Premier League was when it started. Oldham, and I say this with the greatest of respect, are not a Premier League caliber club in terms of size and whatever.
No.
But they earned their place in the top flight, and that's why they were in the first Premier League. When you have promotion and relegation, teams move up and down, and that's why owners hate it. Owners are businessmen. These new owners, private equity guys, why do they want the guaranteed spots in the Champions League? Why do they want Super League? Because I want to have a business where I am guaranteed a return, where I have control. I have as few surprises as possible. Jules, time to handicap the race for the third and final Champions League spot in Ligue 1. Rennes, Monaco, and Nice all win. It took a dramatic injury time winner from the other Thuram kid to get it done for Nice.
Yeah.
Strasbourg, on the other hand, go down to a late goal in Lille. The table reads Rennes and Monaco 59, Nice 57, Strasbourg 56. Who you got?
It's a tough one. I think Nice not playing well enough, and Strasbourg, it would be incredible if they can finish third, because they still have all those teams to overtake. So it's between Rennes and Monaco. Monaco have incredible momentum, 6 wins in a row. They played so well at Saint-Etienne when the game was a shambles because the fans threw fireworks on the pitch. The game was stopped. It was chaos.
Obviously, these are the Saint-Etienne fans, yes, not the Monaco fans, because Monaco don't have any fans.
That's true. But they kept they stay focused and won that game. And Rennes scored 5 past Lorient. Rennes are so entertaining, but they lost to Monaco. They've shown weaknesses in the big games. So between Rennes and Monaco, I would go for Monaco. And I think PSG, Marseille, and Monaco in the Champions League next season, that would look good for Ligue 1. It would be good.
Where's Lyon? Where's Lille?
Oh, Lille are gone. I mean, Lyon are shambles. Their fans, by the way, wanted to interrupt their game that they won at the weekend. They insulted Toko Ekambi. It was toxic. It was ugly scenes.
Was that because they couldn't find Peter Bosz?
The Krubema. But Peter Bosz seems to get away with things, you know? It's unreal. But Toko Ekambi got on the wrong side, provoked the fans with his goal celebration. He all kicked off. It was a crazy weekend in Ligue 1.
Wait, among bald managers, who would you rather go on holiday with? Peter Bosz? Or Erik ten Hag, who I'm told is the first bald... you can't have Pep Guardiola. No, okay. Erik ten Hag apparently is the first bald manager in the history of Manchester United.
Is he now?
Yeah. Okay. Who's more
ten
fun?
Ten Hag or Peter Bosz?
Ten Hag or Peter Bosz?
Who'd you go...
To go on holiday with. We're not talking we all pick ten Hag.
Yeah, of course. Then maybe Peter.
Peter has to be a little more fun.
Yeah. Okay. Peter could a few drinks, and then I think it could be interesting. Back to the Lazio Milan game, Gab. Lazio fans were angry at the club and decided to protest. So what did they do?
Okay, I'm all for fans making their voices heard.
Because of the results, you mean?
No, they decided that they're angry that basically Lazio have created like a new pricing system for tickets.
Okay.
And sort of the marquee games, like this Milan game, the ticket was €40, around about $45. But this is for the curva. This is for the absolute cheapest seats, you know, way at the end at the Stadio Olimpico as well, because of the track and the way it's built. Like, you know, you literally are like in the next, you know, zip code over.
Yeah.
And I think it's the right way to do it. It was a nonviolent protest. They said, we're not going to go to the game. We're going to march, and we're going to stand outside the stadium where the players can hear us, cheer them on, and we're just going to watch it there and stream the game on our phones. And that's what they did. I think that's an effective protest. Did it impact the game? Yeah, because there were only 25,000 people in the stadium. Half of them were Milan fans. So it didn't really feel like a Lazio home game necessarily. And Milan had a lot of support. But, you know, at some point, if you're a fan, you're a customer. And by the way, Lotito's saying like, oh, all the money from ticket revenue goes back to pay off the debt with the tax man that this club had when I bought the club. I'm like, dude, you bought the club 15 years ago. I mean,
this is the best excuse. People have come up with really good excuses this weekend.
Oh my God.
And the last few days.
He's in his own world.
Unreal.
Remember Aston Villa, Valencia, and Lyon striker John Carew and Roma as well. Jules, he's facing 6 years in prison for tax evasion. They don't mess around in Norway, do they?
They don't mess around in Norway at all. So forgot the odd zeros, two or three zeros there, clearly. What's funny is that he played with Michel Bastos at Lyon, and Michel Bastos got done for being too close to a drug dealer from Lyon who he sold his house in cash to, then drove the car. That was, weird. So clearly something in that Lyon team maybe that now they could all meet in jail.
I'll tell you what, free advice, 2 countries where you do not want to be evading taxes, no matter how big a football star you are, Norway and obviously Germany. Go ask.
Spain have chased a few as well.
Yeah, but they don't actually go to prison.
No, true.
Uli Hoeneß.
Yeah,
the man who's responsible for Bayern actually had to serve time in prison.
Yeah, that's true. The Athletic reports that Liverpool are considering a crypto shirt sponsor next season in case their current sponsor, Standard Chartered, is that right? Don't renew the deal. Given the backlash to the NFTs from the fans' base, is this a good idea? Or can we already anticipate the groveling apology after the U-turn like they did with furlough, like they did so many times already, to be honest?
Ticket prices.
Yeah.
Look, I think at some point, I wish people would educate themselves a little bit more. I think I've been following crypto, blockchain, NFTs kind of from the start. Just because there's the word crypto on it doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad or stupid thing or a scam. Now, a lot of these NFTs with the apes and stuff, or indeed the fan tokens, I don't think it's a scam. I just think it's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But if it's an exchange where you can buy, it's a reputable exchange where you can buy and sell Bitcoin or Ethereum, yeah, and it's a reputable brand, hopefully people understand that that is different from a club selling NFTs. But we've reached, there's such an outcry now that whenever somebody puts the word crypto in front of everything, you know, people assume Dodgebots, unregulated, they're ripping off the fan, the working man, you know. So hopefully Liverpool will consider all that, consider who they partner with if they do go down this route.
But you would think that they would have a lot of, they would want a lot of money for the kit sponsor, of course. I think 70 or 80 million pounds a year, which is, But you would think there were few brands, not just crypto ones.
You would think so. But it's interesting with shirt sponsors. This is a whole other podcast, right? I always love to play this game where I look at, like, sort of Premier League shirt sponsors or Serie A shirt sponsors. And I look at, like, how many of these are brands that I actually have heard of? And remember when Spurs were sponsored by, like, a thing called Mansion?
Or betting companies.
Or Wolves, is that a betting company? Is that what it is? Wolves had ManBet, you know, which sounds like, you know, a subsidiary of Grindr or something. Like, I mean, come on, man. Like, something gets hot and then the whole sector pours in for the visibility. These brands, all those betting brands with the numbers in them, can you distinguish them from one from the other? And I think it's a little bit like some of these crypto ones, right? We know who, I'm not going to name them unless they want to pay us to advertise it, but there are 3, 4, 5 legitimate big crypto exchanges that have been around for a long time. And there are others that kind of smack like fly-by-night operations. You know, you have to be smart, and you have to be smart about who you want to associate your brand with. Last show, we told you that Didier Drogba was in the running for the presidency of the Ivory Coast Football Association. How'd it go, Jules?
Not great. I'm sorry. We also told you that it was going to be difficult for him. Didn't make it to the final. Didn't even go past the first round. He got knocked out. There were 3 candidates, and 2 got more votes than him, and they would be
bronze medalist
in the ring.
We should make it clear here, right? It's news. It would have been cool because we've heard of Didier Drogba. I haven't heard of the other 2 dudes. Presumably,
they're like
former international football administrators. This is voted on by presumably members of the Ivory Coast FA.
They've got a committee.
There's a committee and so on.
Plenty of people voting.
Doesn't mean that Didier Drogba is any less popular or any less.
No, definitely not. And again, this is the kind of stuff that maybe you don't win the first time round. You need to work on it, have a campaign, all of that. And he will be better prepared next time when he can try again. Juventus kick off in a few hours, Monday night against Sassuolo Gap. They increasingly link with Angel Di Maria, who will be leaving PSG as a free agent at the end of this season. Is this a good idea?
Let me see. Who's Angel Di Maria's agent? And who's linking him? The same 3 people who act as like massive sounding boards, echo chambers. Yeah. It's like, you know, like there's big stories in the league like, oh, Roma's next 3 signings, and like, funny enough, they all have it's like Geddes and not bad players, but come on, man! Like,
I know,
Di Maria, no,
thank
no,
you,
no, no,
thank
no,
you. I love him. He's been great.
He's
for
a great
us,
player. The age, the wages,
completely.
You have wingers already.
Exactly.
Use them. Chiesa will be back.
Exactly.
2 wins in a row for Burnley since Mike Jackson replaced Sean Dyche. Jules, are you surprised at the turnaround?
Yeah, and even if you go before, there's the draw against West Ham. So it's a draw and 2 wins in his 3 games in charge.
So it's Champions League
pace.
It's
crazy.
If you've been in charge at the start of the season.
It's crazy. I saw a very funny tweet. I can't remember, I'm sorry, who it was from, saying that if they stay up, maybe Fulham can sell them the Michael Jackson, obviously, statue outside Craven Cottage to Burnley for Michael Jackson.
Is that still there, that statue?
I think so. It's obviously a different Michael Jackson, you know, we all get
it. This is Mike Jackson.
But I didn't see it coming. And I think a lot of us were saying like, oh, timing is a bit wrong for Dyche to be gone.
Well, it's also, this guy was at the club, right?
Yeah.
So it's always a weird dynamic, I think, when you have somebody kind of move up from generally, that speaks to the players getting tired of hearing this.
He's been there 9.5 years.
And I think Ben Mee is his assistant while also playing center back. So I think that, I'm not saying
he's not playing now, but
you see what I'm saying? Like,
just one thing: can Mike Jackson can have his initial on his, because he doesn't have one, and it really bothers me.
They haven't found one yet.
Yeah, maybe they don't have an M and a J anymore, but it really winds me because that's what I just have. You know, you've got your initials and you're happy and we know it's you, that kind of stuff.
Alan Pace, MLK Capital, sort it out. Get in that decal.
Yeah, just the initials.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have had one before when he was on the 23s?
No, I don't think so. Maybe they don't do it for the youth. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Kingsley Coman won his 10th league title with Bayern, obviously. One in every single year of his career, which is incredible. I think he's won 26 trophies. He's 25 years old. With three different clubs, obviously, PSG, Juventus and Bayern. Anything significance to this, or is it just like...
I think it's, what, seven that he's won with Bayern, and then he won one with Juve, and he won two with Paris Saint-Germain.
Something
but
like
one
that.
Of them, like, you know, Paris Saint-Germain, he played like 10 minutes or something.
He was really young.
Like, it's the... I mean, Zlatan had a run like that earlier in his career, where he seemingly
won
almost every year. Yeah, for many years.
This is still crazy, though.
Right place, right time. Look, I assume it's that. Otherwise, best thing to do, Manchester United, just name your price, get Kingsley Coman over next season.
Win, I mean, there might be other clubs.
What is the trophy room in his house?
He's got magic.
He's going to have the World Cup?
I hope so for him. Obviously, he wasn't there in the last one. So
he's about to win titles. Right?
So I guess so. Yeah, he will be there. He would be there.
Our pal, Jan Åge Fjørtoft, chose a Formula One metaphor to assess the future of Erling Haaland. He says Manchester City are in pole position, Real Madrid are in position two, which I'm assuming is right alongside them in the front row, and Bayern are outsiders. Does this make sense to you?
Only if City are in pole position, but way in front of everybody else, and then maybe Real Madrid, and then Bayern... Bayern are not going to sign Erling Haaland. They're not going to sign Erling
Haaland. I'm interested. You really think the gap between City and Real Madrid is that big?
Yeah. And the only way I can see Real Madrid signing Haaland this summer is if they know that Kylian Mbappé is not going. And then they suddenly shift all the money and all the plan that they had for Kylian onto Haaland and make the last ditch super seduction offer.
Famous last words.
I don't know. I told you before, I think he's going to go to City. That's what I think. Arsenal captain Sarah Bjørg Gunnarsdottir has criticized UEFA GAB for choosing Manchester City's Academy Stadium. So the little stadium that is next to the Etihad, if you've been to Manchester City before, where the capacity will be just 4,700 as one of the venues for the Women's Euros in England this summer. She said it's disrespectful, and she has a point, right?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. So UEFA countering and saying, like, this is where Manchester City's women's team play.
I know, but that's not the Euros.
No, but that's fine. They're saying it's not an academy stadium. I think 4,700, what I don't get, this is not a good business decision, first and foremost.
Yeah.
I looked at the last Euros in 2017, which was held in Holland, and the smallest grounds had... you know, a capacity of at least 10,000. By the way, Manchester City's Academy Stadium, before people jump all over me, the capacity is higher, but some of that is terracing, standing. Yeah. So it's going to be 4,700 because it has to be all-seater for the Euros. It just feels like it's a silly business decision. I don't know, by the way, again, it's the usual thing, let's blame everything on UEFA, but, you know, it's not like UEFA went and they worked with the FA. They must have had their reasons. I want an articulated reason. Do you think you can't sell tickets? Because we've had a World Cup in between where the attendances in France
were huge.
I mean, they were huge, right?
And we're talking Parc des Princes, Groupama Stadium, those kind of stadiums.
And we know also that, you know, the international women's game actually does draw crowds.
Exactly.
So it's interesting. There's another small venue as well. Lee as well will be hosting. I think they're around 10,000.
Rotherham.
You've got huge venues too, obviously 70,000. We'll see how it goes. But I'm surprised because
I agree with you.
Even just from a business perspective.
I know, sell as much tickets as you can.
Where's the justice? I know it looks really bad if you're in a 50,000 seat stadium and there's 2,000 people there. And that is disrespectful and it cheapens a spectacle. And it's bad for TV.
But that's not going to happen. You don't have 2,000 in 50,000.
I just don't see the logic between having 70,000 stadium over here and a 4,700 stadium in the same competition. But maybe there is one. So UEFA, tell us. Or more likely, the FA, since you work together.
Yeah.
Right, that brings us to an end. But Jules,
already
the champions. We're going to be back on Thursday to break it all down. Yeah. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.